Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
And thanks to Corey Rumer for joining me. Good evening, Corey. Welcome back to the WGN Airwaves. How are you?
Hi, John. Happy Thursday. How are you?
I'm fine. I have located my inner bovine for tonight's for tonight's broadcast. My goodness. Corey, you have so many things to cover. I hope we can get through it in the time that remains, which is between now and 8 o'clock. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Are you ready, John?
I'm ready. Let's start with the state fair and cows made out of butter, because that's a good place to start. The Illinois State Fair.
It is. That was a wonderful intro, by the way, for it. Yeah, my colleague Jake Sheridan went down to Springfield to witness the butter cow in all its glory. I did not know this was a thing. I've never been to the Illinois State Fair, I'm ashamed to admit.
Well, I'm ashamed to admit I've never been there either, but I have been to the Indiana State Fair numerous times, not recently. I've never seen a butter cow sculpture, but that movie clip was, I think, from a movie in 2011 with Jennifer Gardner called Butter, and that whole thing takes place at the Iowa State Fair. And I'm aware that it is a thing, and it's not only is it a thing, it's a big thing. And it's been around for like 100 years. Is that right? I mean, we've had 100 years of butter cows.
Who knew, right? Yeah, apparently, according to the Illinois State Fair, since at least 1922, and they have a hard time trying to figure out when the first butter cow happened at the State Fair, but they figure, because of the limitations of refrigeration back then, they figured it was about 1922. So, yeah, we've had a century of butter cows, apparently, at the Illinois State Fair.
And the idea that it's just a sculpture of a cow, oh, no. There have been, I mean, even the one, I think I saw a picture of the cow that's there this year, and it does not stand alone because there is also a butter farmer. seated next to it. But, you know, butter farmer, who cares? Butter cow, everybody cares. So this has been going on for, like I said, 100 years, and I'm reading your article, and, 1922, refrigeration, not exactly what it is today. And there's legends in your article, legendary butter sculptors. A Norma Duffy Lyon. Is that the correct, do I have the name correct there?
You have the name correct. And, you know, you mentioned the Iowa State Fair.
Yeah.
She was a farmer's wife. She grew up in rural Iowa. Her uncle wrote the book State Fair that later became, a Rodgers and Hammerstein musical.
Are you kidding? The movie with Pat Boone? You don't know who that is. You're way too young. But
I know Pat Boone. It's like my son's name is Boone, not after Pat Boone. But yeah, I'm familiar.
Daniel Boone? Is it after Daniel Boone? Is it after?
It's actually after Boone's Farm County, Missouri, where my husband and I met.
Oh, not Boone's Farm Wine? You don't know what that is either. No. You're too young.
No, I remember it not so fondly from my freshman year of college.
Not so fondly. Yeah. I understand where you're coming from. It's Corey Rumer. We're going to see, we're off and running, man. You see, we start out with a butter cow and we end up with Boone's Farm in college. It's a great life. So not only do we have butter cows this hour, we have the history of Elvis in Chicago this hour. We have the history of the Air and Water Show. All coming up this hour, and we're going to get it underway again. We come back right after this on 720 WGN. John Landecker and Corey Rumer, we're talking about the history at this particular point of the butter cow at the Illinois State Fair. And I was looking at your article, and this Norma Duffy Lyon is, she's passed away, but in her day, she was like the epitome of, she's like the Van Gogh of butter sculptors. or something along those lines. I mean, there's no one better. I mean, she sort of set the standard, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, John, you have radio. I have, you know, stories and whatever crazy stuff they let me do at the Chicago Tribune. Her right. medium was butter. I mean, she found her thing, you know. I think the story is, a long time ago, she went to a fair and she saw some sort of sculpture made out of butter. And she's like, I could do better than that. And I mean, cows were not her only creation. She created a Harley Davidson motorcycle out of butter. She's created a variety of objects. She said her pride and joy was the Last Supper she created out of butter. I mean, and we're talking about hundreds of pounds of butter. And you know what I found was interesting, John? I didn't know anything about butter cows or how they're sculptured before yes. last week. They use old butter. It's not fresh butter. It's like five, 10 years old.
Wait a minute. They use 5 and 10 year old butter? What is it about the 10 year old butter? I mean, why?
It's apparently easier to sculpt. I don't know, but you wouldn't want to eat it, is what I'm saying.
Where do they? You wouldn't happen to know where they store the butter for 10 years to use for the cows, would you? I mean,
no, that's a very good question. I don't think I want to know.
Exactly. Yeah, you said a full. You mean like the entire Last Supper in butter? Everything, like the entire table, so to speak. With all the,
I think it was the figures. The photo that I saw of her, like you mentioned, she passed away in 2011. The photo yeah. I saw of her with her obituary has like all of the figures, and I think the table too. I mean, that is just incredible, right? And it was at the yeah. Iowa State Fair.
Also, Barack Obama. I saw that yeah. was one of the things that she did, and you know, ironically. We're going to also discuss Elvis before we're done with this hour. But there's also, I saw a picture of a butter sculpture of the King of Rock and Roll. I mean,
isn't it just perfect? These things yeah. tie together so easily.
Exactly.
Yes. She was a cool lady.
Yeah, and there's stories about, in your article, about the storm. A storm killed the power to the fair. But not the state fair's butter cow mascot? How did that work? I mean, well, I don't know. They'd still have to have the refrigeration going, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. That's what I would hope at the state fair. And I know, you know, from what I've read, the poor state fairgrounds need some renovations. So, of course, you know, time to time stuff happens and it's yes. extra hot outside, you know, the electricity might blow. Right. What do? You try to keep that butter cow nice and cold.
That then we must have generators or something to fall back on. The thing that strikes me about this, Corey Rumor, we're talking to Corey Rumor from the Chicago Tribune, is that you said you didn't know anything about any of this until last week. Is that what you said?
I tell you, John, we have a couple of meetings every day at the Chicago Tribune, and the Friday morning meeting, somebody said, it was Jeff Cohen, one of our editors, he said, you know yeah. what, Corey? I'd like to know more about butter cows. And I said, you know what? So would I, Jeff.
and look where we are now.
This is the beauty of our archives, you know? We have all this fun stuff in there. You just got to dig it out.
So, and Jake Sheridan, who's one of your colleagues, had a Tribune article about Sarah Pratt. Now, Sarah Pratt is also in, she sort of picked up the mantle, if that's the right term, right? From,
yes.
for the, as the sort of preeminent butter sculptor person for the fair, right?
Yes. Actually, a protege of our friend Norma Duffy Lyon, and learned from her how to sculpt these things. And I don't know if you saw this or not, but in 1997, Norma Duffy Lyon had a stroke and was not able to make the butter cow. She had been commissioned by the state fair, and so somebody else stepped in to do it. But apparently, and I could not find a photo of this, so I could not, you know, justify it. But
right.
apparently, that version of the cow was hideous. And nobody liked it. And when she saw it, she said, no, this cannot be. And she was back the next year at the Illinois State Fair.
Well, I mean, come on. Not everybody has the same talent when it comes to molding butter. I'm looking at this. I mentioned it earlier, but this Nora Duffy Lyon working on her Elvis Presley in butter at the Iowa State Fair on August 7th, 1997. Wow. And then the article today that Jake Sheridan wrote, let's see. I lost my place.
One thing I wanted to mention.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, John. No. The current butter cow, if people like you and me can't get down to Springfield to see it in person, there is a live stream video of it that you can, there's a link to it out of Jake's story.
Oh, man. Now I know what I'm going to do for my weekend. Unbelievable. Come on in, honey. What are you doing in there, honey? Oh, just watching the cow. Has anything changed? Nah, not really. 650 to 700 pounds of butter. Of old 5 to 10-year-old butter to make whatever's going on down there this year. That's crazy. It took her 90 hours over 5 days to craft the cow that is there, that's standing there now. And yeah, I see. Wait, in this, the angle that I'm taking on this picture now, I believe, is that gentleman milking the cow? Is that a butter farmer, so to speak? Something going on. I can't tell because somebody else is blocking the view to the photo and is taking a picture on their cell phone. But it's...
I think we got to load up the live stream, John, and double check.
You're right. Because... you're absolutely right. What am I saying? I have access to it. All I got to do is get to that link and take a look. Is there anything else that you want to add about the history of the cow at the Illinois State Fair? I mean, we're talking about 100 years. You're the person who, you know, is in charge of documenting these historical... icons, if you will. So is there anything, I mean, we've got these other topics and I don't want to leave any stone unturned, so to speak. Is there anything more that you want to add about the butter cow at the Illinois State Fair?
I'll just say that I think it's a great tradition. And
yes.
If you're watching the live stream, if you go see it in person in Jake's story, he says there are 13 hearts hidden on the cow in the display, and apparently the table the cow is standing on is also made out of butter. So I know that was a big thing. But I think we've covered butter cow.
A 13 hearts. What is the significance in that? Do you know?
It's supposed to symbolize the 13 essential nutrients in milk. And John, don't ask me what those are, please.
Oh, I thought that was going to be, some really heavy symbolism that represents the first 13 farmers to cross the plains and arrive in Illinois. But no, there's 13 nutrients in milk. I didn't realize that.
I have no idea what they are. I'm kind of allergic, so I don't drink too much milk.
That's right. Who knew? Maybe the cow's lactose intolerant. Yeah. Possible. By the way, if you are lactose intolerant, don't worry about it. The cow is in a glass case, and you won't be consuming or won't even come close to the cow itself. And Sarah Pratt, yes, that's the protege, is carrying on the tradition. And this is, so there's really only one person who does this every year for this? This is like their... well, not job, but it's an honor, I'm sure, for them. They feel to do this, and they obviously have a great deal of talent, I mean, to do this. And so she does it every year. This is something to look forward to, then. We have a new cow every year. A new cow?
Yeah, yeah. Going around from state fair to state fair to make new butter cows, yeah.
Man. Well, I'll tell you, you've never been to a state fair? Corey?
I've been to the Wisconsin State Fair, but I've never been to the one in Springfield, so I think I need to change that.
Yeah, I said earlier I've been to the one in Indiana, but not in Illinois. I doubt if there's that drastic a difference between Illinois, Indiana, Wisconsin, and the State Fair. You know, my you're a journalist. You know, you work for a newspaper and all that, a big time one, by the way. Not that one in Florida that we talked about once.
Right.
And so my grandmother was a huge fair. She would enter her. She'd be like, I don't know what the right term is. Baked goods, breads, pies, all sorts of stuff.
And, really?
Yeah. And she won, I don't know, how many different ribbons. In fact, a small newspaper in Franklin, Indiana that I found from when she was alive said, if I can paraphrase this, if you took all the ribbons, I own records, that was her name, I own, if you took all the ribbons that I own records had won, it'd stretch from here to way out there. Now, I don't know if that's a journalistic, if that's actual, like, I don't know if that's qualifies as journalism, but there's your
imagine.
Own.
It requires some imagination, visualization.
Yeah. From here to out there.
Think of 25 miles long, okay?
And if stacked on top of one another, they'd reach from here to Indianapolis. All right. More with Corey Roemer coming up because we've got the Air and Water Show. We've got the anniversary of Elvis's death and some great stuff. We don't have visuals, but boy, your article has unbelievable photos of Elvis in Chicago. John Landecker, that's a special mix from the film that's out now about Elvis. And that, of course, is the classic Burnin' Love. I'm on with Corey Roemer from Chicago Tribune. You know, Corey, in case people don't know what your gig is, so to speak, your speciality, if it were, in the historical sense, why don't you explain what that is and how people can subscribe to it?
Oh, thank you, John. Thanks
well,
so
sure.
Much.
Yeah.
So, for some reason, the wonderful Chicago Tribune allows me to dig into their vast archives. The Tribune turned 175 years old in June, so we're celebrating that anniversary all year long. And yeah, I just love to pull out what I find. A lot of times I work with the photo department on that. So especially for this Elvis anniversary that we're going to talk about,
yeah.
Just some incredible photos from our archives. And most of our archives, especially the photos, are not digitized. So that's part of the reason why we have to go in and dig. Anytime there's an anniversary or something comes up that, you know, is timely, we get to dig for those pieces. So it's kind of like Indiana Jones, a little bit of a treasure hunt to see what we have right. And when it ran. So, and all of that is wrapped into a vintage Chicago Tribune newsletter that I put together once a week. It comes out every Thursday afternoon. And if you want to sign up for that, it's free. You can do that at chicagotribune.com/newsletters.
Yeah, and you can see all the photos behind the stories that we're talking about right now, because obviously we can't show them on radio. But this is what Corey does, and I think it's just really unbelievably cool because, you know, Chicago people, we love the history of this town. What can I say? And no matter what it is, really, and to have you on the historical beat in the archives, I just think that's really cool. So let's get to this. Let's get to this Elvis. This was the anniversary of Elvis's death. I'm looking at a picture of Presley performing at the Chicago Stadium on October 14th, 1976. There's one of Elvis clad in a gold leaf suit performing at the International Amphitheater on March 28th, 1957. Wow. I didn't realize. And in 1972, what did you call this? Elvis, like a white Batman dressed formal?
This is what the reporter at the time wrote, because I was not alive yet in 1972. So,
wow,
I mean,
wow.
I just love that description. I love that description. And, John, this is where I'm relying on your expertise, because you've been there, man.
What do you want to know? I mean, you wrote the article.
Everything. I want to know everything about Elvis. I mean, I think it's hard for somebody like me to just imagine somebody like this coming out and being so explicit and in your face at a time when, you know, if I were a teenager and I saw that and my parents were listening to, I don't know, what did people listen to before Elvis? I guess that's my question.
Well, if you go back far enough, I mean, people even like Frank Sinatra at a certain, and this is even before my time. There is a time that was before my time. I know a lot of people don't realize that. But a young Frank Sinatra was a teen idol. I mean, there were people screaming and yelling about Frank Sinatra the same way that people screamed and yelled about Elvis, the way they screamed and yelled about the Beatles. I don't know who people scream and yell about now, but I'm sure there's some screaming and yelling going on because there's that relationship between teens and, you know, teen idols. And Elvis was the first one, though, to break out of your parents' music library. I mean, Sinatra, you know, you got your Sinatras, your quote-unquote adult contemporaries. You've got the Tony Bennett's and the people who sang, the crooners, that's what they called them, crooners,
yeah,
in like the 50s. And then all of a sudden, here comes this Elvis, and he's just all over the place. And we mentioned Pat Boone, didn't we? Yes,
yeah,
in passing.
Yes.
Well, so you had a dichotomy at the time. You had the good guys, you know, the good people were like Pat Boone people. The bad people were Elvis people. In the 60s, the good people were the Beatles people. The bad people were the Rolling Stones people. And, I mean, it was marketing and all of that. But that's pretty much what Elvis was all about. I mean, he was an incredible talent. Well, you know, you wrote this article. I mean, you've got these great pictures in here. Man, I just that International Amphitheater in 1957, that is just unbelievable. Have you seen this Elvis movie that's out there, by any chance?
No, I haven't. I wanted to ask you about that. Have you seen it?
Yep. I thought it was really good. It's not exactly, no movie about it. Is it like a docudrama, you know, based on actual events, can recount those actual events 100%. So everything is sort of adapted for the screen. I really liked it. And I'm reading this this quote from the Tribune that you dug up. He kissed a few never-to-be-forgotten kisses, tossed a few perspiration-soaked scarves, graciously accepted the lingerie, crouching and karate chopping. He teased the audience into perfectly controlled, orderly, well-behaved hysteria, the Tribune reported. Yeah, for some reason, those in the crowd occasionally who had lingerie felt the need to throw it at Elvis. And he graciously accepted it.
What do you do with lingerie? If you're on stage every night and you're getting that stuff tossed at you every single night, what happens to that stuff?
Well, maybe you open up a subsidiary of Victoria's Secret. I don't know, but it was, I've seen, there was Tom Jones, the singer?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, in his heyday, which would be, I guess, sort of mid-70s, that occurred when he was on stage. I don't think there was as much screaming and yelling as far as teeny boppers and all that kind of stuff, but there was definitely women who were adults who either brought with them extra lingerie, or I don't want to even think about where else they might have gotten it at the time, and they would throw it at Tom Jones on the stage, too. So apparently...
Oh, my God.
Ah, yes, I love educating the youngsters about what happened back in the day. But, you know, for people of my generation and maybe some others, like, not everybody, okay, you go sort of go through a cycle, you know, like Elvis, okay, it's great, it's great, it's great. Then he dies, and I don't know, I don't think about it that often. But then when I saw this movie, I just couldn't wait to get back into the car and crank some Elvis. I just thought it was really well done, and the music was fantastic, and I talked to some people who were putting on the Elvis Week at Graceland, and they confirmed that the movie was bringing in a younger demographic. So for whatever that's worth.
That's good to hear, because I didn't go to Lollapalooza, but I watched Metallica perform online at Lollapalooza. And I think that was the takeaway from that performance, too. At one point, the lead singer, James Hetfield, asked, how many of you are at a Metallica show for the first time? And, like, everybody raised their hands. Yeah. And so, to me, that's kind of fascinating when, you know, we talk about Elvis and how it wasn't your parents' music. What nowadays, when... You know, I can't wait till my son gets a little bit older so I can take him to concerts to introduce him to the type of music that I like. I just think that there's something really cool about that, and to know that, you know, if your kid loves the same music that you love, like how awesome is that?
No, that's very it is really awesome, and I don't think that that was something that happened that often in previous generations, especially when rock and roll started. There is a very large anti-rock and roll contingent of moralists, conservative preachers. You know, it was the devil's music, quote unquote.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's not only withstood the hands of time, it's passed on from generation to generation. I mean, songs from and groups from the 60s, 70s are enjoyed by everybody from grandparents to their grandkids, so to speak. You know, it is a very cool thing. Boy, you know, what you were talking about started me on another direction, but I can't go there now because we've got something else to do, but one day we will.
Yes, we will.
And that would be like, okay, what did Corey get into when she was in high school? But right now, we got to take a break and come back and talk about the Aaron Water Show on 720 WGN. WGN getting ready for the Aaron Water Show, and we're talking to Corey Roomer from the Chicago Tribune, who has the history of that big event. Going back to when? When was the first Aaron Water Show formally presented? When was that?
It was in 1959, and from what I can find, the Chicago Tribune did not cover it at all, so that tells you it was not a big deal. But
really?
The interesting thing about it, is that it was put on to celebrate Chicago Park District summer camps and to give the kids something to do. So I think I read that there was like a greased pole competition, and there were water skiers, and I think it was put on for $88. And the guy who did it was a Chicago Park District employee. His name was Al Benedict. And he would go on, like, this would become his thing for decades and decades, to put on the annual Air and Water Show. And he, through the years, he'd partner with different sponsors and eventually was able to get bigger acts. You know, the military acts that we know, like this year, for example, the Navy Blue Angels are here. So it's a huge deal. People who are downtown, you might have even heard them practicing today. And I didn't realize there are two camps of people. There are the people who love the Air and Water Show, mm-hmm. and then there's the people who don't love the Air and Water Show.
I know. Yeah.
So, you know, I don't want to offend anybody, but I did grow up as an air show kid. So
exactly. I wanted to get to that right away because, okay, we did a thing about butter carols. Corey says, well, you know, haven't been to the Illinois State Fair. Elvis Presley, too young to be around. However, when we get to the Air and Water Show, a young Corey Roomer is right there. Tell that story.
Well, I just remember this was like my dad's thing. He loved it. And so we'd hop in the station wagon. We tried to find like the best vantage point where we didn't have to go out on the beach with hundreds of thousands of people. And we usually would end up somewhere near Lincoln Park Zoo. And so sometimes the view was blocked, but for the most part, we could see. And I just remember we'd have lunches, you know, we'd fold down the tailgate in the station wagon, and we'd all sit there and just watch. And it was kind of like, you know, last week I did a vintage newsletter on the Bud Billiken Day Parade and how it was like, you knew it was the end of summer, it was back to school. And for us, in our family, I knew when it was Aaron Water Show time that it was, you know, after that, summer was over.
Yeah. Well, I just love that personal touch in your article because it was it was touching. It was heartwarming. It was a really cool little slice into the young Corey Roomer and her family. And, you know, I'm sure there are other Chicago families who just heard what you said who can relate totally to attending you know, air and water shows over the years, trying to get parking, going with the family, taking food. I lived in Lincoln Park once, and I think they're rehearsing today, and it was like jets were passing. It seemed like right into your living room. It was so it was unbelievably loud. And I read something on Facebook today from Lisa Dent. You know, the WGN studios are on the 18th floor at 323 East Wacker, looking right down the river over Navy Pier. And this is where the jets come to rehearse. And she said that the windows in the studios were like, well, rumbling, so to speak. I mean, you could they're not rumbling. They were like vibrating. You could tell from the jets that went by, because obviously these are military grade jets, and this is what it's like when they're close. I mean, it's pretty incredible. But you go back in the article to 1929 and Amelia Earhart organizing a Chicago chapter of a woman's flying club. What was that?
Okay, this is amazing to me. And another reason why it's so fun to go through the archive, because you find these types of details. I think Amelia Earhart, who, by the way, went to high school here in Chicago. So we've done other flashbacks, we call them, on her, and have great photos of her when she would return to the city. And so she wanted to make sure that women knew they should get into aviation. It was something that they could have a part of as well. And she said this before a crowd at the Congress Hotel in 1928. And like you said, in 1929, started this group called the 99s. And I think there were a couple of other local women aviation groups that were spawned by this. And so just the thought of, even back then, trying to get women up into the air and giving them the freedom that she was able to experience. And we know some, too, about Bessie Coleman and how she, as an African-American, was not able to get a pilot's license here in the United States. She had to go to France to get hers, and she became an aviatrix. I just love that word. She would perform at air shows all over the world. So I just found this to be a really cool story, and again, a history I didn't even know existed, that women back then, and even it continues today, are still flying, and they do it as a group together. I just think that's so cool.
Well, speaking, this is somewhat on topic. I saw an article in the past couple of weeks about on Southwest Airlines, for the first time, a mother and a daughter are both pilot and co-pilot on certain flights. And that's the first time that has ever occurred. So I think that goes directly to your point. Okay, Corey, I'm going in a completely different direction. Forget all the stuff we just talked about. I'm going to ask you a quick. All right. What's the first concert you ever went to?
It was Garth Brooks at the Rosemont Horizon, and it will always be the Rosemont Horizon to me.
What's the best concert you've ever attended?
I think it was Green Day at the Aragon Ballroom in 1995, just because I was young and scared, and it was so cool to go into the city as a girl from the suburbs, you know?
And the most recent wait a minute, I'm not done yet. What's the most recent concert you've been to?
Well, I was supposed to see Elvis Costello at Canal Shores, near where we live in Evanston, for the Out of State concert, but I was out of town. I was in Canada, so I missed that one.
It was just something we did on the air last night, and I was blown away by WGN listeners who would call in and, like, say, I went to see the Dave Clark Five, which was an English invasion band in, like, the early 1960s, 64, with the Beatles, and the last concert I saw was this past weekend at Wrigley Field with Lady Gaga. I mean, it was like, stuff like that was just, like, blowing my mind. Corey, darn. We're out of time. But as usual, fantastic. Love talking to you, Corey. Thank you so much.
Right back at you, John. Let's do it again soon.
Absolutely. Corey Rumer from the Chicago Tribune.